Hello and welcome to Living with Dying, the podcast where we try to cover all aspects of death and dying. And today I've come to meet someone who's experienced a loss of a parent and a child. It's Ginny Daly I'm talking to. Thank you so much for seeing me. Where do you think you'd like to begin with your story of your losses?
Well, thank you, Des, for having me and letting me share my story. And it's a hard one because I suppose at the age of 46, I've experienced two significant losses. One more recently of my mum, who passed away in December 2023 of cancer. Quite a short illness, 8 months from diagnosis to death. And I supported her through that. And that was very hard. But also, I suppose my perspective is also around child loss as well. And having lost a child in 2013, which was 10 years actually between losing Finley and then losing my mum, I have that perspective of either side of loss. But the experience was completely different. So having lost a child, nothing prepares you for it, nothing. And I lost a child, you know, a stillborn boy at 41 plus 5 days, so very late term. Whereas with mum, it was shocking to get that diagnosis, but there is something around acceptance that you will lose a parent at some point in your life. And I was grateful for those 46 years I had with her. And I have a lot of lived memories with her. But when you lose a child, there is nothing to prepare you. And on top of that is, I suppose, the shock of society and how it's not really spoken about. So accessing support groups as such was a lifeline at that time. Whereas with mum, I was allowed to speak about it. And that's really interesting.
Isn't it? So you're talking about friends, really, who would encourage you to talk about losing your mother.
Yeah, friends, colleagues. You know, sadly, cancer's prevalent, and unfortunately, and there is an amazing network of charities out there that provide information and resources. And it was a free sort of conversation. While it was very hard, I found that I wasn't stopped to talk about it. I think, yes, there's always, people don't like talking about death or dying, but I think I was able to talk about her diagnosis a little bit, treatment, how we supported her through the last 8 months of her life. Whereas Finley, no one can comprehend. You went into hospital to give birth, but you gave birth to a dead baby. And yes, I did. And he was a beautiful 8-pound boy. And it's interesting being in this place now, how grief is all wrapped up and tied in, but they're all very, very different experiences. And I have to say how grateful I was to my mum at that time to get me through those early years with Finley. Yeah.
So you seem to be saying that nobody else would talk about it.
Yeah.
But your mum was there for you.
That's it. Yeah, mum was there. Mum was there to get me out of bed. Mum was there to check that I've cleaned my teeth that day. Mum was there to talk about Finley.
So important.
So important. So important. Well, yeah, it's learning to live with the two people that you love and that are no longer here anymore, and how I continue to have a relationship with them, but in a very different way, but yet the same, if that makes any sense.
And she would have been a big link to Finley for you, wouldn't she, that's now gone?
Yes. Yeah, so there's that part of me that's not supported in that area where she was there when I found out that he had passed. She was there when in the hospital when I had delivered him. And you know, it's interesting just talking about child loss and stillbirth. And I remember, I think, you know, I had to tell the world, and I thought, well, I don't know quite how I'll do it, but I'll let people know that I've had a son. His name is Finley, and he'll always be with us. And that was sort of it. And I remember everybody saying, I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry. Sorry. But one person said, well, congratulations on being a mother. I'm so sorry to hear he's not with you anymore. And, you know, that was so powerful. To be recognised as a mother, as my first son, when the rest of the world, I suppose, you don't get that recognition. You've given birth to a child, but...
And you've carried that child.
You've carried that child.
It's been part of you.
You felt every kick. You felt, you know, you've called him a name, and... You have a relationship from the moment you find out you're pregnant, really. Mm. And then it's the future, isn't it? The future planning. And that's a very hard thing. It's not only have you lost a child, but you've lost your future relationship, future milestones, the first birthday, the first time they go to school, the 18th, the wedding. It's all those things. And, you know, yeah, I think Mum was very good at helping me come to terms with that, but also holding hope for the future. And that was really important at that time. Mum and SANS, really, SANS being the charity that supports child loss, stillbirths and neonatal deaths, that have really been the lifeline.
Yeah. So can you tell me the story about what happened
with Finley?
When Finley was born?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to take you back to... a very hot summer of 2013. I was 35 and I was had a low risk pregnancy. Everything was fine. I mean, we were excited. We'd been married, 2.5 years. And actually before that, I did have a miscarriage. So to get pregnant again and to have a full-term baby, you know, I was delighted because miscarriages are equally hard. But this was the hope, you know, the hope, they call it the rainbow child. And it was a low-risk pregnancy and, everything was fine. I was at Queen Charlotte's Hospital. I was in the birthing suite because I was low risk, so that meant I could have a free birth without any intervention and such. But a few days before my induction date, I hadn't given birth naturally, so they allow you to go to 42 weeks at Queen Charlotte's, and that's not the same for every hospital, but because I was low risk, I went to 42 weeks. But a few days before, they started to notice some symptoms, and I had increased blood pressure and swelling. But it wasn't enough to keep me in, so they sent me home. They noticed, the doctors said, you know, your blood pressure's actually come down while you're in the hospital, we'll send you home. Come back on Friday for your induction. The really sad part of that is that we, you know, we did go home on their instruction. First time mum, I didn't know. And sadly, we went home that night, and it was about 3 a.m. I felt very different and strange. I kind of woke up and almost felt fitting inside. I called my husband. We rushed to the hospital, but I could tell in the car there was no more movements. Mm. There was no more movements, even though I was, you know, having chocolate. Finley would always respond to chocolate brownies. There was no response, and Well, yes, we went into the hospital, and you could just tell the look on the consultant that met with us. They asked me to go into a side room, and they brought the machine in, and, you know, and it's very hard to tell this because I know it will resonate with so many mums. And yes, they put the scanning instrument on your stomach, and I can see him. I can see Finley in the scan. I can see his spine. I can see his body. But there was no heartbeat. But they say, just a minute, I'm going to call a second doctor. And yes.
And you knew what that meant.
Yes, yes, yeah. And that's what they tell you, I'm so sorry.
Oh, that must be so devastating. And only hours before you'd felt movement.
Yes, it was six hours before there was. We were sent home. We were sent home, and, you know, there was a lot of questions have had to be raised since on why we were sent home.
But in the moment, the most shattering news any mother, any parent can have.
Complete shock, really. A complete. I remember my husband having to wrestle me back to the bed because I was just screaming. But it's so, you know, it's very hard to get your head around because you know you don't think in these day and age with all the tech that we have, all the interventions, all the monitoring that this still goes on, and it does sadly. And you know, since subsequently through my work with SANS, I see how too common it is still.
Same situation of mothers being sent home.
You're sent home, or allowed to give birth in, you know, in low risk units, and yet they are what they class as geriatric mums. You know, there is, you know, a lot of it is midwife led care, and whether voices are being heard or not, you know, it still happens. And
you were in one of the supposedly finest institutions possible to have a baby, surely, isn't it?
Yeah, Queen Charlotte is renowned for maternity in many areas, but I was always midwife-led care. I never had a consultant until I went in when it was too late because I was low risk. But it's, and I've heard too many similar stories around this. And then, I mean, at that point, you're told to go home.
That's what I was going to ask. What happened next? How well did they look after you? How were you feeling? How was your husband feeling?
Well, it's strange how much of that I've sort of shut down, but I think I insisted that I'm not going to go home. Because the thought of going home into what was his nursery with all his things, you've bought everything by that point because you are beyond your 24 weeks, your full term. So I insisted on not going home. Now, that's not always the case for women. Some women choose to go home. I couldn't, so the consultant agreed for me to stay, which actually led to me having a few sleepless nights before giving birth to Finley. So I was quite exhausted before my labour. So I suppose to go home, you're meant to help start the process of adjusting to this news, and I can see why. But I just chose to stay, and they give you a tablet, which helps bring on your labour, and then they did an induction to deliver him.
But you had to go through a quote normal labour, did you?
Yes, I had to deliver Finley naturally, vaginally. I had to, it was recommended because of complications with a cesarean at that point.
Did it take a long time?
It did. I, you know, as a first time mum, it took It took about 16 hours.
Gosh. Oh, that must be the worst possible thing to have to do.
Yeah. You are put onto the labour ward, and you do hear cries of other babies.
Oh, makes it worse.
They do try and help you. At that time, there wasn't such a bereavement suite, but now, with the work of SANS, there are bereavement suites that are away from the labour wards, a little bit more holistic and natural and helpful and quiet, and your partner can stay. But at that time, there wasn't that resource. But oh, Jesus, I do remember, you know, even the midwives being hugely impacted by this. It was, you know, it wasn't just me and my husband, Matthew. It was the cries of the midwives that I hear outside the door still in my head.
Oh.
The silence of the birth, but the cries of the midwife.
Oh, gosh. I can't put myself in your shoes. It's impossible to imagine how extraordinarily hard those hours must have been.
Yeah, I was shouting to my husband. I mean, it felt very hard for him. He stayed in the room. He witnessed everything, really. And I remember when Finley was about to be delivered, I said, "Don't look, don't look." It's almost in my head, I had this thought of this monster being born or something disfigured or something. But he was just perfect when I did go to see him.
Did that take some courage?
Yes, I didn't do it immediately. The silence of delivering, the silence of the birth was so loud. And the midwives, very, you know, all credit to them, attending to him beautifully and giving him the care and respect he deserved. And us as parents. And they managed that part well. And I'm very grateful for them. There was two of them. And they took him away because I couldn't see him. But my husband was very brave and he said, "I'd like to go and see him. Would you mind if I do?" And he said to the midwives, "I just want to make sure his eyes aren't open," because he had a very strong memory of his dad when his dad died, of his eyes being open. Mm. The midwives say, "Of course, you know, he'll just look like a sleeping baby." And he said, "Fine." And he went to see him. I thought that was so brave. And when he went into the room next door where they put him and wrapped him lovely. But he went in and had some time with him and then came back to say, "Yes, he's a beautiful boy, perfect in every way."
And that encouraged you?
Yeah.
Then to say you'd see her.
So I sort of got myself together after giving birth and went into the room next door and met him.
It's interesting that we're so frightened of death, aren't we, that you thought it was going to be something that would be horrendous, and in fact it was beautiful, as you said.
Yes, isn't it? How we have those visions of what death is, and actually, you know, he was very perfect and round face, chubby cheeks, and just a little bit blue. I held him in his sheets, but I couldn't really hold him for long, but I did give him a kiss, and I looked at his hands, which looked like my husband's, and tucked them back in so he was cozy and warm, and sort of left that room. It really wasn't long, but I did meet him, and I'm pleased I did. And it's such a horrible, horrible, gut-wrenching feeling. And we talk about it in our SANS groups, you know, it's that leaving the hospital without your baby.
You've had to go in with a car seat?
Yes. car seat was in the back of the car. Yeah, I think my husband went down and put it in the boot, and that drive home was emptiness.
And empty arms.
Empty arms. Yes. We quickly ran away to the Lake District, actually, a few weeks later, just to get out of our house. But I remember that feeling of the empty, even in my sleep, my arms were reaching out. And of course, your body does think you've had a baby, and so you start to produce milk. I'm told for some women you can take a tablet to stop that happening, but I didn't know about that, so
milk came. So it's a constant reminder.
Yeah. I really don't know how we got through those days, but we did somehow.
That was going to be my next question. How on earth did you get up the next morning even?
I really don't know. I suppose it's all... Looking back, I was, I guess I was in shock. Like I say, my mum was there to help. I do remember wanting help pretty quick, and I think my GP was very supportive. I was very lucky. I had a really empathic GP at that time too, who supported me through those early days. I suppose not in medicine, but in emotional support and checking in on me.
Oh, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, so she remains a close friend to today. I remember thinking, I've got to speak to somebody, and I suppose this is where SANS really came in. With SANS, I keep talking about this charity, because I called this number out of the blue, and somebody picked up the phone, and somebody said, you know, I understand, you know, I get it, me too, you know, and all those feelings I was experiencing, you know, how can this happen, how does this happen, and they're like, it does happen, I'm really sorry it happened to you, we're here for you. And I think that maybe gave me that little bit of light that, like, I'm not the only one who's had this happen to. And then I wanted to understand what helped them get through. And that was it. That was when I started to go, right, somebody else has survived this. I can. And then, of course, I'm now a mother on maternity leave with no baby.
Of course.
And they give you 12, my company that I work for, they don't give you the full maternity leave, which is sort of a strange period.
So what did you do with that then?
So, I don't know, I just remembered, I just remember sort of wandering around the streets and not really knowing, crying a lot, and looking at babies everywhere, and buggies and prams, and just massively triggered. But I think I filled it up with some charity work and worked at a food bank, and again, my mum was there, and we filled our time, got through the days really somehow.
And you told me before that you found some groups to go to. They were SANS groups, weren't they, where you could meet other mothers. And what sort of point did you find those?
Yeah, so it was having contacted SANS. I then had somebody speak to on the phone, and they recommended that I go to a support group. Was local to me, and they said when I was ready they would be there for me. And I think, well, we lost Finlay in August 2013, and it was around the November I think I managed to build up some courage to go to a meeting. And of course the whole season had changed, and I hadn't really noticed, and I was still in my summer. But of course the nights were getting darker, and I would have had a 3 month or 4 month baby, but I had nothing, so I had to go and connect, and SANS was that beacon of light in the darkness. Yes, it was dark outside, but also in my life I was in a real dark patch, and there was SANS. And I just remember walking into a meeting, and there was a handful of mums and dads there that all looked very, you know, all looked very normal, and this happened to them too. You know, there is, it can happen to anybody. That's what I suddenly realised. Like, it wasn't just me. It was anybody and everybody this can happen to.
And that felt helpful, did it?
It felt helpful to understand and relate to people that have had a lived experience of this. And it was a lifeline to understand what it felt like to walk out of hospital with no baby, to understand all those first milestones that we have to have. You know, for some ladies, they've lost before their due date. You know, the due date was massive. And then it's the 6 months, and then it's the first year. And what it's like to sit in a cafe full of buggies, mm-hmm. which we all take for granted, like those things. And how we're all getting a bit angry with our family and friends for not saying the right things or not saying anything. And it was a real place that I could just relax and sort of...
So did you sit around like in an AA group and just share your stories? Or did
yeah,
you...
it was sort of, I suppose it is. And it, for those that have never been to a support group, yes, it was us around a table with a few candles in a little church hall in Chiswick. And I remember the Lynn, who's a lovely lady who led that group at that time, she said, you know, it happened to me and it happened to my daughter. So they had both had a loss. And we sat around and we ate biscuits and we, you know, it was just like a one big hug. And we all had a hug at the end, and we stayed in, and I stayed in touch with a few ladies I met there, and it became our new NCT. Because, of course, we had to drop out of our NCT and all those lovely relationships and friendships we made, and we just couldn't go near it. And I had my new NCT, which... We had a bit of a dark humour around the Dead Babies Club, but, you know, it kind of, like, we had to find solace in each other. And that, I think from that point onwards, that was my lifeline to getting through that first year, was those women and some dads that I met and stay in touch with now, really.
And now you work for SANS, don't you? So let's come full circle. Tell me exactly what SANS stands for.
So SANS, stillborn and neonatal death, is... what SANS stands for, and it's a national charity that supports bereaved parents who have experienced stillborn or neonatal death. So at a national level, they have provided, their objectives are to reduce the number of babies that die. At the moment, we have 13 babies that die every day in this country.
13 a day, gosh.
So that you, that's about 4,500 a year. So their objective is to reduce that number by education. But they also provide resources such as how to support people that have had a loss, how to, you know, make funeral arrangements, how to work with employers for colleagues that have had losses. But at a local level, and that's the level that I work at, is about the support groups. And I volunteer my time to run support groups in West London, in Chiswick.
So you're now providing what was so helpful for you in those early days.
Yes.
That's a lovely way to have come full circle, isn't it? Really?
Yes, absolutely.
Helping others.
Absolutely. That local level lifeline that helped me, I can give back to. And it's just so vital. I mean, I have, you know, gone on to have two more lovely boys, Leo and Eddie, and, you know, I'm a mother of three, and I think it's just so important that we can keep talking about our children that are no longer here, and that's what we do at that meeting, and we have evening meetings, daytime meetings, and, you know, things like the daytime meetings, you know, we make sure there's no prams or buggies around for those that might be triggered of that. Or if you are pregnant after your loss, we have a meeting for that, so how to support people through that nerve biting next 9 months of pregnancy. So we have, evening and day.
And do you talk about Finley a lot with your other boys?
I do. We have a tree in the park. And we go and visit that tree and we talk about him. And they ask questions. How did he die? Why did he die? What would he look like now?
Well, that's a tough one.
Yeah. And they're hard to answer sometimes. I don't always know. I don't really. We never found out why Finley died. We don't have the evidence. We had post-mortem and everything like that, but we never had a conclusion. And 50% of all stillbirths is that they don't know why.
Really?
You are looking for evidence in those early days as well for why this. Was it something I ate? Was it something I did? Did I lie down the wrong way?
Tendency to blame yourself.
Very much so. That's, I think, something I have to work hard at. There's something you do often, new mums feel they are to blame, and
Well, you're the only one looking after that
yeah,
baby,
I'm the
aren't
only
you?
one who knew the kicks weren't there, and so it's very hard to live with it. You have to accept it. I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything unusual, and the hospital sent me home, and
But that's such a common feeling after a bereavement of any kind, isn't it? People always feel guilty. They'll find something to feel guilty about, even if there isn't anything really, I think.
Yes, you're right. But as the mother,
It's
and I
even
suppose
worse.
at
It's
any
much
child,
worse.
any stage you lose a child, as a mother, you always feel like the protector
And responsible.
and responsible. And that is probably one of the hardest things that I have to continue to live with. I think everyone experiences are, after their losses, very different in an individual to the parents. Some people really want to stay with their babies, and what sands do is fund and purchase cold cots, which I don't know if you know about a cold cot. So a cold cot is essentially that. It's a cot that is set to a particular temperature that will preserve the baby's body for as long as it can while in the hospital. So rather than 24 hours before you see the degeneration, it can keep the baby there for maybe 3 days. So the parents can have longer to decide
Oh,
if they want
that's
to see the
nice.
baby. And I think that is a wonderful opportunity that Sands, can fund that. I think for me and Matt, our experience was, this is so horrific, and I have to get out of here. Immediate feelings of running away. In retrospect, was that the right thing to do? I don't know. I would have liked longer, but it was very hard to attach to something that's not there. I couldn't. I don't know. We really don't know what the right or the wrong thing. There's no right or wrong, I suppose, in that situation. You have to just do the best you can to cope. Like anybody, after losing a loved one, some people want to stay, some people don't, some people want to go back to the funeral parlour. There is no right or wrong. You have to just work with what feels right, and I think we've come to terms with that now.
And hopefully, as parents, you agree because that must make it easier than if one wants to do one thing and the other wants to do
Yes, we were
different.
working, yeah, we were very much in line with each other on that.
Let's come on to your mother now, shall we? Because you mentioned earlier on that she was present at the birth, present with you after you delivered the baby. So that was a big thing to have her there. But I don't, did she know what was happening when she came to be with you?
We called her when we got to the hospital, and told her the news, and then she came straight away to the hospital.
She must have been devastated.
Awfully devastated, yeah. I can't even imagine how she dealt with that, because this pregnancy was important and she was there through it. And now she, I suppose, what she wanted me, I think, and what she told me is like, if you're okay, I'll be okay. It was that sort of mantra of looking after me. But for the actual delivery, you know, it was very hard to have her in the room. I sent her away because I kind of felt like I wanted to protect my mum in a way too. And she wanted to see Finley, but I said no. In a way that I'll deal with this tragedy or this loss. It's interesting how we all try to protect each other. And she was very present for me. She just was, I think she just saw it as her mission was to look after me now while Finley wasn't there, but keep his memory there with me. Yes, I can't imagine. And I know she got the train back from Queen Charlotte's on her own. Oh, yeah. And I keep going back to that place of what was it like for her on that train? You know, how could she, did she see other babies around? And
grandchild. She expected to have.
It's her first grandchild. Yeah, gets me.
And then you lost her about a year ago, you were saying. So all those shared experiences, you've got no one to talk about them with any longer.
No, so 2013 we lost Finley, and 2023 my mum died. So 10 years. I'm grateful that she saw me have more children, and she was at the birth of Leo and Eddie, who are now 10 and 8. I'm so pleased. It's hard, isn't it? It's very hard losing a mum or close to. It's interesting we talk about choices. Well, we don't have choices as such around Finley. I didn't choose that. But I chose to keep his memory alive. I've chosen to keep his legacy. I've chosen to talk about him in my family. I've chosen to talk to you. It's really important. And with Mum, when her diagnosis of cancer, we got it in the March, and she died in the December of 23. We sort of chose, you know, I chose that I wanted to help her. We knew it was straight away terminal. It had spread too far from when we got the diagnosis of lung cancer. She chose not to have treatment. The choices we had, we chose to live out her last 8 months the best we could. And it was a wonderful summer, and we had garden parties. And Leo and Eddie could play in the garden, and she could watch them play cricket. And we didn't have to go in and out for treatment. And I mean, it was hard to respect that decision, but it was one that she chose with courage. And so we could have all the last conversations. And we chose to keep her at home. And me and my dad just really nursed her through those last 8 months and made the best of what we could. And those are the choices that I have made in quite, and we have made in a very difficult situation, yeah.
But quite a different set of circumstances, because one loss was so sudden and unexpected, yes. And the other one was planned.
Yeah. And yeah. Yes, so you have those last conversations, and you, I suppose, make some. I was very grateful to tell her and thank her for all the support she gave me around Finley. And I feel a lot more accepting of that. It's as hard as it is, she was only 74, really, and but I suppose it is the circle of life. In fact, she brought us tickets to see Lion King, so we could all understand that it is the circle of life. And there's something about that you can integrate and accept. But with Finley, no, it was very, very difficult, very hard. But grief still hits.
So your grief is different, but it's not less.
No, grief is different, but it joins up. It does all join up. And there were still very dark, low days. But I'm so grateful for the memories, you know, and the legacy that she's left behind.
And I'm so interested in what you said right at the beginning, which is that you feel able to talk about your loss of her, but you were unable to talk about losing a child. And that's because of society and the way we don't like to face up to the worst things, I suppose, isn't it? Like you said, we accept the death of a parent in the circle of life, but the death of a child interrupts that circle, doesn't it? And people don't want to face it, do you think?
Absolutely. It's the worst thing, isn't it? It's the worst. You know, we lost friends. You know, people couldn't come into our house until we had another child.
Mm.
And when we had another child, they said, right, everything's all right now. And it's incredible. Like, why? And I suppose that, you know, it's about, if we could just say their name, really, say their name, acknowledge that it happened, a baby was born that died, whether it's in utero or a few days after, you know, it happened. We can't pretend it didn't happen. And I think the more we can talk about it and support each other, it's so helpful to a mother to accept and to almost, you know, to be proud of that child as we would our mothers.
I was going to ask you finally, really, to sum up what you would have liked people to say to you, but you've actually already mentioned that, haven't you? That friend who said congratulations.
Yes, yes. The friend that said congratulations on Facebook. Congratulations, you've had a child. I'm sorry they're no longer with you. You know, you're just acknowledge them as mothers and say their name, really. Just say their name and honour that name. And it's okay to talk about it. And that's the amazing work of SANS, that we allow that safe space to talk about these children that are no longer with us and to keep their memory alive. Even if we don't have such lived memories, they existed, you know, they did exist. And I feel really proud in the work we do with SAN, you know, that we can help new mothers. But like I say, it was hard to find SANS. Mm. It was easier to find cancer research and the brilliant work that they do.
Do you think it's easier nowadays?
Yeah. With SANS, I think we've still got a long way to go. But we are more, we are educating more in the hospitals. There's a lot more national work being done. The funding has increased. And we've reduced numbers from 17 to 13 a day. So it's getting better, but there's still a long way to go. I still think there's a huge stigma around child loss and experiences of child loss, particularly stillborn children, which is the worst, giving birth to a dead baby, and nobody, it's horrific. Nobody should go through it, but they do, and how can we help them? I did return to work after perhaps 6 months, because I enjoyed my work, and it was important to me, but going back into the office was really, really very hard to face people that you, when you left, you were, you know, huge, big belly, and full of joy and happiness, and to return, or you know, completely feeling like you failed. You know, this sort of loss really impacts your confidence at every level, because you feel you failed as a mother, you're not competent and capable as a person anymore, and that will thread through into your work. So going back, it was a real like struggle, but I knew I had to do it to feel okay enough to find parts of me again. So as I entered the office, you know, I did a very slow return, but in the days I entered the office, you know, it was pre-COVID, so everybody was working in the office. I remember a lot of people avoiding me and not wanting to talk to me at all, really. Not knowing what to say, whispers. You know, from the dinner lady, the lovely canteen that we had at Sky, but they would say something like, how's your, you know, who haven't, they didn't know, of course, with these dinner ladies.
They didn't know.
Because they weren't really in the part of the business that did know. And they would say, oh, lovely to see you back, how's the baby?
Oh, gosh.
Which, Luckily, it didn't happen that often, but it did happen. And of course, you tell them, and then they start crying, and then you sort of try and support them. So it's really hard. So we always encourage people in our groups at SANS, you know, to find a way to communicate to the team in a way that you feel comfortable with, whether it's a group email or something you're doing for the charity, to tell people the story. I think if you lead and control it, it helps. But I found a way. I found that talking to people on one-to-one, or almost going over to them to allow them the space to, in a private space, to say, you know, I'm back, can we catch up and do it one by one individually. But
sounds like hard work.
It was really, and I had to manage it, otherwise people wouldn't talk about it. It was the unspoken that really got to me, and to be back and present in my workplace, I wanted it to be spoken about so that I could move on.
What would you have liked people to do the minute you walked in?
I think I'd like people to welcome me back and acknowledge what had happened. And I think it is a two-way thing. So I think you've got to help, like I say, you've got to help people in saying it's okay to talk about Finley. And that's why I always say, like, find a way to communicate that on your terms. So you could send something to the HR team to send out to the business before you return, for example. And I think doing that, it helps, because you want people to acknowledge what has happened and say sorry. It is the silence which is the hurts the most.
So you want someone to approach you,
yes,
and say, I've heard what's happened.
Yes.
I'm so sorry. How are you?
Yes, exactly. You've said it perfectly. That's exactly it. And even if you don't know what to say, I really don't know what to say, but I'm just so pleased to see you back. It is the acknowledgement we want, not the silence.
Well, it sounds like you're doing wonderful work with SANS. I can only congratulate you on that.
Oh, thank you. Yes,
really. And thank you for telling me all about it and sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Denise, for letting me have this opportunity. It means a lot.
That's what we like, isn't it, to talk?
We do, indeed.
Talk about them.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.